The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Gold's dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cane. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, David Wren, aka Dave, from LA, here in FEMA region number 6 now, no longer in FEMA region number 9, we're in FEMA region number 6. And I just want to thank you all for tuning in to Tando Radio Show today. It's a live show today. Today is April the 25th, 2016. It is a Monday, and we are going to bring to you a very, very important live show today. And first of all, I just want to say, I love that intro, Scotty. Love it, love it, love it. Man, that was hot. I love the very beginning of it. Scotty always does great work. So everyone, listen, so important that we support Black Talk Radio Network and all of the efforts of Black Talk Radio Network, because where else do you get the information that you're getting? So right now there is a crowdfunding campaign that is ongoing as we speak right now that you can engage in order to support and energize the overall economic and financial direction of this network, which is so important, and to establish all of the programming that you hear here on the network that brings you information for the benefit of yourself, your family, and our collective community at large. So right now we're having a crowdfunding campaign, and you can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and hear the crowdfunding digital black media page that's there. And right there, you will be able to see the actual campaign that we're having. And for the crowdfunding campaign, what you get with that, with the first option, if you donate or contribute $24.99 or less, every contribution is worth its weight in gold and so important. If you contribute $24.99 or less, you will, via PayPal or send a check or money order to Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, and that zip code is 28120. That's Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. And when you send $24.99 or less, what will happen for your, what you will get for your contribution is you will get a monthly statistic report of the radio station and social media operations via email. That would be option one. And you can donate right there on the webpage by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com/crowdfunding, Black Talk Media. You can donate there. Next option is option number two. And if you make a one-time contribution of $25 or more, In addition to receiving everything that you receive in option one, you will also get a free Black Radio Stations Matter t-shirt as an appreciation gift for your contribution. Now, this t-shirt is first class. I love it. It's comfortable. It's beautiful. It's one of those t-shirts. I'm going to have to get a couple of more. Some of them I'm not going to wear, and some I will wear. And as we speak right now, Scotty is actively putting together t-shirts for our sisters that are listening. So ladies, you will not be left out at all. There will be t-shirts for women that will be developed, and Scotty will give you further information. You could also go to the overall website, blacktalkmedianetwork.com, and find out when that is going to happen. But the t-shirts, the $25 or more contribution t-shirts have already gone out. Now, this is how this works. If you give $25 or more, you will receive the t-shirt. But if you want two t-shirts, what you need to do is give $50 or more. If you want three t-shirts, you need to give $75 or more. Four t-shirts, $100 or more. It's moving. T-shirts come in the increment of $25 per t-shirt. So, and the t-shirts are already starting to ship out. I will tell you, I received mine very, very quickly. And it wasn't just because I'm on the programming on this station. Scotty didn't even know the business name for me, and he just sent it. He doesn't look at all of that stuff. So, and I received it very, very quickly. So that is option two. Option three is if you're a monthly contributor of $25 or more, in addition to receiving the monthly reports and the social media activity report, plus the free Black Radio Station Matters t-shirts as an appreciation gift, you will be eligible to receive gifts as an appreciation for your contributions, for your financial support. So that is the best option. Become a monthly contributor and receive all of the gifts and the actual appreciation tokens that go along with it. Now, remember, everyone, if you're going to actually donate $25 or more for every t-shirt that you get, please give a good mailing address and not only the t-shirt size that correlates with the overall donation or contribution that you are making, so that you will have the right sizes for yourself and your family. This is a great gift. This is something that we all can give and partake in. So you can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/crowdfundingdigitalblackmedia. And the Black Talk Media Project is crowdfunding campaign is right there. You can't miss it. So please engage in that, because that is what is going to keep this radio station going and allow it to grow. Tell your friends, tell your family members all about it. And as we said before, actively look to this summer and this spring. Have some event where you live that Black Talk Radio Network can be featured. So this is so, so important. And please, this is our network, and we need to support it so that it will be here. Now, with that being said, everyone, please go to Tando Radio Show's Facebook page. That's THANDO Radio Show Facebook page, and check out some of the articles that we posted there. Before we get started, the Uncle Fat seasoning is now back ready for order, and they are actively making the great seasoning that they have, all natural ingredients for this great, great seasoning. And believe me, you will love this seasoning. It enhances everything that you put it on. And this is, I know from me using it, and from friends that have come over to the house and would ask, what is the seasoning that you're using? They absolutely love it. We tell them about it. You can actually get these ingredients, and it's, you will be happy that you have. And how you can get this, you can go to getunclefats@gmail.com. That's getunclefats@gmail.com. Place your order there for the seasoning, and believe me, you will be happy that you have. Great, great stuff. Also, our overall precious metals and preparedness classes are in full full-fledged and going. We're pretty much having each day. Just if you'd like to get and partake in that, just email me or text me at 951-790-8330. And or you can email me at wolf6pack1@gmail.com. wolf6pack1@gmail.com. Nook, who is this? One second. We got Nicole Collins. If you can, Nicole Collins, you need to text me or email me because we got out of contact and for I need you to contact me. Nicole Collins, if you're listening to Tando Radio Show, please contact me by either calling 951-790-8330 or emailing me at wolf6pack1@gmail.com. That's Nicole Collins. Okay. Now, with the precious metals and preparedness classes, you will learn the intrinsic value of precious metals. You will learn the history of precious metals. You will learn how to leverage precious metals. You will learn how to gain interest off of your purchases, and you will learn why it's so important to engage in these things, and also some of the incredible benefits of having the precious metal. This is something that you want to engage in, especially in the direction that we are moving economically. So also with the preparedness training class, if you'd like to get in front of that, what we talk about, what I will show you there, some of the ways that you can prepare, and all of this can be done for only $25 a month. Okay? $25 a month, and believe me, the information is far, far exceeding what you will receive. The 1 hour classes per day, I just need to know what your schedule is, and we need to schedule you and get you going. So just reach out to me. You can text me, 951-790-8330, or call or email me at wolf, W-O-L-F, the number 6, P-A-C-K, the number 1, at gmail.com. So let's go to Tando Radio Show real quickly and check the Facebook page on the Facebook page that we have for Tando Radio Show, and check out some of the stories that are there. Now, we left off on, after the show was over, this the first one, we're going to try to run through this because we got an important show for you today. But there are some key things that we need to talk about. Now, I know I said that we would do the 96 hours of the margin call. Because of some things that are going on, I really wanted to move us past that today, and we're going to pick that up first thing tomorrow. But today's show is very, very important and is not one that you want to miss. So let's jump into this very quickly so we can get moving on it, because I want to get through this show today. First one that we posted, this has to do with the law enforcement around the country is preparing for civil disobedience because they know the overall civil riots are coming. Law enforcement's training courses end with mock riots at MMC, and that was posted there. Next one, I posted where our prosperity mint is, that's actually ours. And that is posted there. If precious metals, if you're looking to purchase precious metals, you can purchase from us there on Prosperity Mint. So Melanie Payne says, so you're back to advocating to buy online? Well, yeah, that's because I'm in full control of it all. Yes, we are. Mel, see you in a couple of weeks there, Mel. So check out that. Next one comes from the Telegraph. I won't say where it's from because we got to get through this. Gold is the speculative hunting of our monetary system. Check out that article by James Richards. Very, very important one there. It's from the Telegraph. Next one posted. Oh, man, this is one of my favorite ones. I won't have time. I want to tell you this story that I heard about Michael Quincy Jones and Prince. I told it to our trading group today. It was real, real funny. But this is from theroots.com. It was posted throughout Facebook. I thought I would just throw it on Tando Radio Show. This is Prince, James Brown, and Michael Jackson all on the same stage together. Check out that article. Next one comes for public safety. Inland agencies deputies drones for crime and rescue. U.S. Basically the U.S. military throughout the country, particularly in California. And this is going to be in the Inland Empire, San Bernardino area region, or throughout Los Angeles and everywhere else, pretty much everywhere in the country is now starting to use drones. And you can only imagine what they're going to use those drones for. Before you know it, they will weaponize those drones. Next article, U.S. dollar collapse. Check out that article. Next article, hybrid war, hyenas tearing Brazil apart. From Pepe Escobar, from RT, very good article. Check that one out. This is a very, very important article that we have posted here. This one is from The Guardian. Barack Obama tells young people they are the key to changing the world. And this is the key. This is why my commentary, I said, what the heck? WTH. Laugh out loud. Boy, this stuff is thick. Another hint as to what is really unfolding. If you notice, the trip he is on has been to all the countries known to be friends and allies, but now those friends are abandoning ship left and right, and why he has had to go and visit them, trying to push, pull, or drag them back into line, but no cigar. Like in everyday life, there is no honor among thieves. Check his quote. This was talking about Obama. When asked about his president legacy, Obama said he was proud of health care reforms, which received huge cheers from the audience, and said the U.S. response to the 2008 financial crisis, saving the world from a great depression. Sorry, that did not happen. They just were able to put it off. It is unfolding as we speak right now. And it's not that we're telling you anything that you shouldn't already be known to you, anything that shouldn't be known to you from listening to Tando Radio Show. But these are all of the clues and the hints and substantiates and validate why you need to be preparing, because they are telling you everything. The last trip that the celebrity figurehead CEO of the Corporation of America was on, he went to Saudi Arabia, got smacked down, got reversed, and was told, nope, we don't need you, and we are moving in another direction. Saudi Arabia is going to drop all of its treasury bills, or at least a lion's share of them, basically all of them. Then they went to England, got smacked over again there once again. In England. Then they went to Germany and got smacked yesterday in Germany. This is because they were going all over the country trying to reestablish and to reharvest and to reaffirm their overall ally support, and they got none whatsoever. The whole world is moving into position to divulge itself and to actually separate and to sever ties with the U.S. economic dollar hegemony and the geopolitical hegemony of the United States. And you are going to be held holding the bag if you don't prepare for this. Now, next, North Korea launches a missile from a submarine. This is huge. Once you can do that, you can attack anyone in the world. This was a huge accomplishment by North Korea, telling you everything where things are going. We're moving to a global nuclear war, people. So just so you know, next one comes from Superstation 95. Earth's magnetosphere collapsed in space today for 2 hours. Trouble ahead. So this was posted yesterday. Check out that article. Once again, I posted the North Korea launches missile from submarine, says can hit the U.S. with nukes. Why is this so important? Because that's the way we're going, moving to a global nuclear war. Next one, Bank of Japan vows negative interest rates on credit to spur economy. Japan's economy is totally faltering, and they will have to, as being the second largest of U.S. treasuries, they're going to have to dump the treasuries, and they're going to dump them on you because they don't want them anymore, and they're not going to be able to survive holding those treasuries. If you think that you'll be able to do that, then go right ahead. They will have enough for you to hold. It's an all-you-can-eat banquet in it, but it's not going to have any nutritional value at all. It is only going to be filled with GMO food that is going to get you sick. And that's what is happening to this overall currency as we speak right now. They are dumping left and right, and they are dumping it on you. And because we in this country, most of us don't know the difference between the important things of economics and financing, they are going to be able to easily hand it to us, and we'll gladly take it, and the rest of the world will happily serve it because they don't want that poison pill anymore. But we have grown up on it, and most likely most of us don't know what's happening, and we'll take it. You don't be that person. Prepare for yourself accordingly for what's coming. Next, the FBI, well, it's not coming anymore. It is here and is only growing and expanding in its overall spread. FBI has no idea how often it hacks your devices. Ha, yeah, right. Next article comes from UK payers hand over $123 million to oil gas giant Shell in taxes. UK payers, which is going to happen to you too. Next one. This is a really, really important article. Secret court takes another bite out of the Fourth Amendment. That is your search and seizure and false arrest amendment. This is telling you we are moving towards a totalitarian in a completely fascist economic and corporate and governmental geopolitical rule. Next one, Chelsea Clinton's. Now that Scalia's gone, we can enact gun control. Man, she looked just like her mama. And I'm going to just say enough there. And now you can know what I'm talking about there. But hear what she said. Chelsea Clinton, now that Scalia's gone, which means they did away with him. They did away with it. They're being so bold about certain things because they don't care what you think. They have to act this way, and they're going to have all-out concentration camps in the future. Why? Because it's the only way that they're going to be able to hold on to the little power, because they too will be sacrificed, and they want to pass that down to you. So forget about it, Chelsea. You're just as ugly in heart as your mother and your father. Next article. Physically, too. Next article. Woman leading the Flint water crisis lawsuit murdered inside her home. This is the purge, and this is the growing of the purge, and you're going to continue to see that. Believe me, if somebody told you I did something to myself, don't believe it, but it really don't matter because I'm not scared of these people, because how can you kill me and you never gave me life? I'm always going to do what I think is best for myself, my family, and my overall collective community. I don't care what they say. There is no fear that you can bestow upon me. Threats of family, threat of self, threat of that. You have no control over my decision, my free will. That is how I live a self-determining and sovereign life. My knees don't bend to any man. So this is something that you're going to continue to see as the overall hit list start to expand. This is nothing more than, this wasn't a coincidence. This is nothing more than a hit. But believe me, this does not stop the overall direction. The only people that are fearful of these things are slaves. Slaves are afraid, while warriors make a commitment to all, to actually give all that they have to maintain their freedom, because they know that they are going to make the great transformation anyway. They're going to make it on their terms. They're not going to make it on the behest of someone else begging for their life. So next, sudden death of Flint water employee comes during the water crisis charges, amid water crisis charges. No coincidence, once again, a hit. Next, psychological impact of sending robots assassins halfway around the world. So this is not only going to happen halfway around the world. This is going to happen in your neighborhood, in your backyard, because they're going to weaponize these daggone drones, and these cowards are going to actually pull all the stops out to get people scared. And if you're scared, you will always be a slave, and you will continuously die throughout your whole living existence. You will. I don't know this, but I do think this, that is probably an energy, because energy is transferable. That is probably an energy that you will take into the next form of your overall eternal life in the great transformation. I won't be taking that with me. The Tando Radio Show listeners and Black Talk Radio Network listeners, I don't believe you will either. So make sure you don't. Next article, suicide rates has risen sharply in the 21st century. Middle-aged white Middle-aged whites, especially women, are killing themselves in large numbers. Let me tell you something. This is the design, and there is going to be even more of this to come, because there is a paradigm switch where hate has an expiration.
It appears that Brother David got disconnected. This is Scotty, the station manager. Apologies for that. I'm sure he is working on calling right back in as soon as he realizes that he isn't on air anymore. So we'll go ahead and take a early station identification break, and hopefully he'll be back, dialed back in at that time, and continue with the program.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
The world will soon place you and your family members under geopolitical, economic, and social unrest. Are you ready? If your answer is no, then this is the opportune time for you to become informed, aware, and prepared for soon coming events. For only $25 per month, become educated in the area of precious metals and disaster preparedness for your home and businesses. For more information, email wolf6pack1@gmail.com. Because becoming an entrepreneur is very empowering, we would also like to encourage you in firing your boss. Learn the wonderful opportunities in the Forex market. Find out more about these proven strategies at www.imarketsliveinternational.com. The time has come that we become empowered instead of exploited.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Sincere inquiry. Don't let the church shoes fool you, man. All right? You know what I mean? You understand?
I'm back, Scotty.
All right, Dave, we're just coming out of the break, so you can continue.
Okay, cool. Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show. I'm your host, David Wren, a.k.a. Dave from L.A., coming to you live from FEMA Region Number 6. Now, let me tell you something. My phone hardly ever does that. And so we get kicked off and everything else, so we are doing the things that we're supposed to be doing, and that's not going to stop. So for those of you, do what you got to do. I will always do what I have to do. So going on, we were laying out some things. So I'm going to start just before we go into the show of today. The last article was the Russians buzz American ships may be met by forces, General said. And this was the NATO general that is going through Senate confirmations right now. John McCain and a couple of other senators were drilling him as to making sure that he will respond to the Russians by force. And this is what they want to do. Let me tell you why. Because when the celebrity figurehead Obama was traveling around the world going to those allies, because they don't need him nor want the U.S. anymore, he had to go and try to reestablish the their commitments to each other. And they told him no. They also was possibly trying to push for an engagement against Russia. And Germany definitely didn't buy it, because Germany is going to go to the BRIC nations. Watch and see what happens. And you're going to see some major attacks on Germany, China, and Russia in the future. I wouldn't be surprised if China has an earthquake or some other thing happens in Germany. Why? Because this is what happens when you move towards war. And we are going to definitely, when the bully finally gets challenged, the bully takes a cowardice act and will try to sneak you. And that's what's going to happen here. The U.S. is going to try to sneak its way in a sucker punch. So this is what you can expect to happen. And I tell you this. One of the things that happened when the Turkey shot down the Russian Su-64 the beginning of the year, a lot of people don't know that possibly was flown by a CIA operative flying a Turkish F-16 fighter. Purposely done. This is all going to lead to what the agenda is. But believe me, when they engage Russia in a different form, either by ship or by air, especially by air, depending on what the overall plane is that they're going to engage. Sorry, U.S., you're way behind. About to get your hat handed to you. So this is where we're going. So check out that article. Next one, White House. Next one I want to talk about real quick. White House proposes to release secret pages from 9/11 inquiry. Why does this happen? Saudi Arabia wants this to happen because that gives them plausible deniability for dumping the U.S. treasuries, which they're going to do anyhow. Iceland plans to create its own money. This is huge. Tells you everything. Next article. This is a great, great article. We're going to try to spend more time on this sometime later this week. Chief HPV scientist admits vaccinations are a deadly scam. The purge, and I said the purge continues. Next article. I said, as the world turns away from the U.S., the United States is going to turn on you in a very authoritative way. And it says, why should we take advice from a president who has surrendered the world to chaos? This is the purge I was telling you about. And they're going to also start to bring the financial markets, which they've already started, and everything else in the U.S., the corporations, into the overall global court of global opinion. And they're going to convict the U.S. And the U.S. is going to act like all of the other countries of the past and respond by having a military engagement of tyranny against the rest of the world and its citizens, and they will be thoroughly smashed, and they will require that you foot the bill through enslavement, wage enslavement, and so many things that are planned. But we'll talk about those things. Next one. This is very important. One-fifth of the world's gold is buried in London. And it says, and here's where it's hidden. Check this out. This is what I wrote. This is my commentary. Due to the current events, we have hearing a lot about what is safekeeping from different people, from Prince's music to England, China's and Russia's gold votes. I would ask you, do you have a vote do you have a vote or any items that holds your savings of prosperity, or does someone else hold that energy of your labor as their leverage? Do you have a vote? What is it holding that is an asset? One of your biggest assets. This is really important. One of the most important things. Number one, your biggest asset must be you. And you should have saved other resources as a demonstration of your power. Otherwise, your potential can be water wasted on the floor. This is critical. You're hearing so much about what Prince had in his vaults and what different countries are having in their vault right now. Why? Because they're moving from a debt-based economy to an asset-based economy. You have to move into assets. And one of the things, if you like to move into precious metals, you can go to Prosperity Mint. That is our website. If you are looking to purchase the medals, you can do it there. Next. Next one says, right click to translate to English. China is building the largest gold and silver vault in the world. And then the next one after that, Hong Kong local gold exchange to work with ICBC in launching of the Shenzhen services. And I said, okay, folks, this stuff is building way beyond compare. Please protect yourself as the rest of the world is doing. They will leave you holding worthless U.S. dollars without even and won't even have to hear your screams of protest once they completely drop the U.S. dollar, and they're going to drop it on you. So these are some of the things. Oh, one more before we jump into. It says, now it is almost impossible to save for retirement. This comes from Sovereign Man. And I said, there are things that you still can do, but the key is, will you? So, and this is what we talk about here. Oh, one more last one. And I said, right click this to translate to English. I said, and this one says, virus cyber attack of Grumman software in Ackermannsdorf, Germany. Ackermannsdorf, Germany. They hit it with that nuclear power plant was hit with a Skuznash type virus. You're going to see this pass. And remember what I said earlier, you're going to start to see. I wouldn't be surprised if China has a major earthquake or Germany starts to be attacked. Why? Because Germany has already decided to go with BRICS and the rest of NATO knows, which is going to break up NATO. So they will be attacked. So this is what you need to know. And believe me, when they attack them, this time they will lose. The U.S. will lose. This is where we are, and you need to know. So listen, we're going to jump into today's show. And today's show is going to be about, you know, there was science and there was religion that was systematically used as an asymmetrical warfare against Black people throughout this world. And this is very, very significant because that same science they taught you to worship, that same religious practice they taught you to worship, and that has all been fostered in and stained in the blood of our ancestors. And this is one of the things where the great creator God Almighty never knew this church. It is nothing more than a figment of the imagination. I mean, a figment of the truth. Along with this same science. And these are the things that you need to know so that you can start to put into motion how demonic these people are and what their real goal is. Their real goal is to totally, totally enslave and control people and not to give any form of equality, because they can't give equality. We keep asking for freedom from people that can't give us freedom because they don't have the ability to enslave you either. So how can they give you freedom? The great creator God Almighty gave you something called free will. I'm going to say that one more time. The greatest gift the great creator ever gave you is something called free will. And that will is your freedom. Because if you execute your free will in a free, self-determining, and sovereign way, you are truly free. And you will not be as prone to fall for the deceptions of man's bill of rights, man's decrees, the deeds never follow the creed. Man has nothing to offer you other than enslavement. Because only thing that they're going to give you is a different form of slavery. Because they didn't create you. They didn't have the benevolency and the sincere act of love to create you in the image where you would create the same thing. The free will was given to you to decide what it is that you will do with it. And we really need to look at these things from this standpoint so that we can see the power that we wage and stop marching, petitioning,
and asking from someone that has historically never had your best interest at hand to all of a sudden become your great liberator. And it ultimately boils down to we've been performing demigod worshiping through false religions and through false practices and false procedures throughout our lives. And we think it's cool and we think it's acceptable. At some point or some time, you need to ask the critical question. And that critical question needs to be, what has changed? What is really going on? What are we gaining? What are we being deceived by? And what is our free will yielding? So this is critical. This is critical to it all. So we're going to jump in this. We're going to go straight through this. And then after it, it's about 60 minutes. And then after we'll come back and talk about it before we get out of here. You're listening to Tando Radio Show brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We're going to jump into this. And we'll get back and we'll jump into the overall commercial breaks, but really pay attention to what is going on here, because this is the same practice that is happening now. They just revolutionized it in a different form and fashion, but the same intent and the same people and the same organizations are still in control and manipulating and deceiving you from who you should be, the way the great creator intended you to be, free and independent. Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah, when you're playing the clip, when we get ready to go to break, just pause it, and then it'll restart whenever you're ready to pick back up, since now we're doing it a different way. So just give you a heads up.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Thanks, Scotty. Here we go.
From deep within the dunes of Africa's Namib Desert, a terrible secret is beginning to emerge. These are the remains of victims of the world's first death camp. A place where thousands of Africans were exterminated by the German army 30 years before the Nazis came to power. These remains have lain here, forgotten, for over 100 years. But this terrible place is not unique. Scattered across the world are the sites of the massacres and genocides of imperialism, where millions died in an aspect of colonial history that Europe often chooses to forget. These people were victims of the truth that lies behind the myth of the white man's burden. Throughout the 19th century, European scientists, writers, and philosophers developed ideas to justify the mass killings of the Age of Empire. These same theories went on to inspire some of the horrors and the savagery that would consume Europe in the 20th century. The 19th century was to end with the worst crimes of empire, but it began with a great moment of optimism. In the 1830s, in the great plantations of the Caribbean, Britain prepared to become the first nation to end slavery. 750,000 slaves across the Caribbean were about to be freed, and as Britain basked in her sense of national benevolence, it was presumed that the grateful slaves would transform themselves into a hard-working and Christian peasantry. The battle against slavery had been led from the pulpit by an alliance of Christian abolitionists and missionaries. They had fought the campaign from their churches and meeting halls. In the 1830s, it was their views that dominated the national debate on race.
When slavery was finally abolished, there would have been an enormous sense of elation and achievement on the part of the abolitionists. Don't forget, this was a 50-year campaign from 1787 onwards, involving hundreds of thousands of ordinary British people, petitions, etc. So that when slavery was abolished, the abolitionists had won, a sort of sense of triumph. I think they also felt that that question, am I not a man and a brother, was answered.
The abolitionist response to that great question was that although men and brothers, black people were lesser men and lesser brothers.
I think in that moment, the dominant perspective is of a hierarchical racial order, but one in which it's a question of culture and civilization. They certainly do not think that black people are equal to them at this time. They think maybe at some time in the future, they will be equal.
The mission to raise up the black and brown peoples of the world to the supposedly superior level of white Englishmen was not to be confined to the former slaves. This was to be the great task that would justify the expansion of the British Empire.
The abolitionists satisfied one aspect of their tutelage and governance of black people in that they fought and won for the freedom of black people. The next step was to send your stormtroopers, your missionaries, into Africa and the Caribbean to finish off the job, as it were. You know, these are heathens who have to be brought into the fold of Christianity. That notion of giving civilized values and modes of behavior to other peoples, that's the ideology that underpinned the empire.
In the empire that the missionaries and abolitionists set out to create, indigenous peoples would see their cultures destroyed and their religions eradicated. And yet all this seems almost benign when compared with the grim reality of what imperialism became. Because during the 19th century, their dream was gradually overwhelmed by another vision, one that claimed that the dark races could not be civilized and should instead be exterminated. The event that began the slow collapse of the missionary vision took place in a then little known outpost of Britain's vast and expanding empire. This is Tasmania, on the southern coast of Australia. What the British did on this small island was to resonate down through the Victorian age. When the British started to settle in Tasmania in 1803, they encountered the ancient Aboriginal peoples of the island. Only 5,000 strong, they had lived in complete isolation for 10,000 years, on the very edge of the habitable world. The settlers saw these people through ideas brought with them from Europe.
Quite early, you get expressions of disgust and shock about the way the Tasmanians lived. To the Europeans, it appeared that the Tasmanians were without culture, they were without religion, they were godless. So they looked upon the Tasmanians as people who had been left behind by history. And they also related to a very popular idea of the late 18th century, that is the Great Chain of Being, that the various races of humankind were arranged in hierarchical order, and that the Tasmanians were uniquely savage and primitive, and therefore can be treated almost as animals.
The British set about building a new capital and settling the surrounding countryside, land that for millennia had been the prime hunting ground of the Aboriginal. Out in these fields and pastures, far from the control of the authorities, the settlers were free to displace and abuse the Aboriginals.
From the 1820s, huge amount of Aboriginal land has been taken up, and there is this enormous struggle between Aboriginal people and white. Of course, it's very hard to document a lot of the settler violence because they know that it is against the law to kill Aboriginal people. They are being told that Aboriginal people are British subjects. But they certainly reveal in their diaries and journals the desire to kill Aboriginal people.
What became known as the Black War was a hidden conflict. The landscape itself was the only witness. The British settlers killed any Aboriginals they encountered. Whole groups were massacred. Kidnapping and rape became commonplace. The Aboriginals regularly attacked the settlers as they fought desperately to defend their land. And as the death toll rose, fear fused with hatred.
In such circumstances, it was very easy, on both sides, no doubt, to regard the other side as being totally subhuman. I've got no doubt that the Aborigines thought the Europeans were people totally without morality or without any restraint. Equally, the Europeans slipped very quickly into a view that these people were animals and savages. So that conflict in such a racially divided society so easily tips over into an extreme feeling of hatred.
The death toll of the Black War had terrifying implications for the Tasmanian Aboriginals. The British, who arrived in ever-increasing numbers, could replace their dead. But the Aboriginals, only 5,000 strong before the war, could not. And by the end of the 1820s, they were at risk of being completely annihilated. The only man who had any hope of halting the violence was the colonial governor, George Arthur.
Now, the governor of Tasmania is an evangelical. He knows Wilberforce, and he is aware that his future and his reputation depends on how he deals with this problem above all else. Now, he's already been warned in the late 1820s by the British government that the rapidly declining numbers suggests that these people might be exterminated. And were this to happen, it would be an indelible stain on the reputation of the British Empire, but by implication, it would be disastrous for his career.
Governor Arthur set out to save the Aboriginals from the violence of the settlers. And to convince them of his good intentions, he produced a poster that was attached to trees in their homeland. It showed a fantasy of interracial unity. The poster spoke of British justice, promising equality before the law. The white killer of an Aboriginal would be hanged. If an Aboriginal killed a settler, he would be hanged. The poster also propagated the lie that the British wanted to integrate with the Aboriginals. It was both a fiction and a complete failure, because out in the bush, the killings on both sides continued. And in 1830, Governor Arthur embarked upon a new policy. He ordered the army to sweep across the area of European settlement in an attempt to capture the remaining Aboriginals. He offered a bounty for every Aboriginal taken alive. But the operation was a complete failure. Only two were captured, an old man and a young boy. After years of guerrilla warfare, the last few hundred of the original 5,000 Aboriginals had learnt to hide themselves in the bush. Determined to save them and determined to take their land for white settlement, Governor Arthur changed tactics. He now turned away from the army and looked instead to a missionary, George Augustus Robinson. He was the leader of a band of Aboriginal converts and was now hired to go into the bush and bring in the remaining Aboriginals.
Robinson took a message that the government wanted to come to some sort of an agreement, a negotiation, a peace treaty. And that is, I believe, undoubtedly the way the Aborigines saw it. They too saw this as a way to end a conflict which they had realized they could never win. They could never get rid of the Europeans. If they stayed and fought, they would be wiped out. And Robinson and his intermediaries convinced them that they should temporarily go to an island where they'll be looked after and fed, and that they will ultimately come back to their homelands.
The island was called Flinders Island, and 300 Tasmanian Aboriginals who had been collected by Robinson were transported here. Robinson came with them in the official role of Chief Protector of Aboriginals, a job for which he was paid a total of £8,000, a small fortune in the 1830s. A settlement was constructed for them, complete with houses, farmland, and a chapel. Robinson called it Point Civilization, and a local artist was brought in to paint the portraits of the last of the Tasmanians. Ginny had been captured by Robinson following the near annihilation of her people by the settlers. Wuradi had been a chief until his community had been wiped out by a European virus. Another local leader, Manalagena, had been lured to Flinders Island with a promise that the convicts who had attacked his people would be brought to justice. And there was Truganini, whose husband had been murdered in front of her. All of them had seen their culture almost wiped out. What little was left, Robinson now set out to erase. Because Point Civilization was not merely a settlement, it was essentially a factory to transform so-called savages into civilized Christians.
To become a successful Christian, he believes, you have to settle down. You have to live in a village. He wants to send the children to school. He wants to teach them to plough and to sow and to become agriculturalists.
4 to adopt an alien way of life and confined to an island hundreds of miles from home, they began to succumb to European diseases and what the local doctor called dejected spirits.
They die one by one by one. Children are not being born. And there must have been this enormous sense of trauma amongst them. A people that had once been strong and healthy, suffering this enormous decline within a generation.
George Robinson, the supposed savior of the Aboriginals, was reduced to sketching out his plan for their future.
Hey, Mel, what's going on? Hey, call me after Tando. Okay, talk to you soon. You're going to be here in a little bit.
He cries with the mourners. He weeps himself. He's so moved by their fate. But ultimately, he says, well, it is better that they die here, having learnt the message of the Gospels, rather than be killed in the bush by the settlers. He finds a way to ease his own conscience, so that Robinson's own beliefs, you see, protect him against a full accounting of what he was partly responsible for.
Of the 300 Aboriginals lured to Flinders Island, by the mid-1840s, around 260 were dead. Ginny, Manalagena, and Wuradi had all succumbed.
All right, everyone, give me a go to a commercial break. Sorry about that. You heard some of my background noise. I'm sorry, we had a bunch of calls. Hey, we're going to go to a commercial break. Hope you're learning some. This stuff is very, very important because it shows you the overall evolution of what has been happening for a while. You're listening to Tando Radio Show brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after these quick commercial breaks.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. We're going to go right back to the clip that we're playing. Hope you're learning something. And definitely after that is give us a call, 641-715-3660. And the participant code is 549032#. The caller that was in queue right after we finish, definitely give us a call. Here we go.
Truganini was one of the few survivors. She lived on, growing into old age. When she finally died in 1876, she was regarded by some as being the last full-blooded Tasmanian. A people whose story could be traced back 10,000 years had, within the span of a single lifetime, been almost exterminated. What had happened in Tasmania was far from being a unique event. Across the world, indigenous peoples were being pushed to the brink of extinction. In the South African Cape, the Khoisan peoples had been driven from their land, enslaved and killed in their thousands by British settlers and the Boers. The same forces had also attacked the ancient Stan Bushmen of the Kalahari, hunting them down as if they were animals. In Newfoundland, the native Beothuk peoples had been completely wiped out by Europeans. And in South America, wars of extermination sanctioned by the Argentinian government were raging against the Pampas Indians. Everywhere, it seemed, white settlers were destroying indigenous peoples. And in these very same years, the old racism that had been born in the age of slavery began to reemerge. In the aftermath of abolition, competition from new sugar producers began to undermine Britain's once mighty sugar plantations. And as their estates rotted, the former slave owners began to blame their ruin on the people who had once made them rich.
When the Caribbean plantations started to lose money in a big way, they fell back to the stereotype of the lazy Negro. The planters were then able to say to the abolitionists and to Britain, look, we are now in ruin because we no longer have the freedom to coerce blacks to work. We no longer have the freedom to drive them to work. These people are intrinsically lazy. You know, you were arguing that they were human beings, a man and a brother. But in fact, they're not. They're still at the level of beasts.
Whereas up to the end of the 1830s, it's been pretty unpopular to talk about Africans in those ways. And the respectable talk of the humanitarians about Africans has been, you know, far more prevalent. By the mid-1840s, that's beginning to shift.
Those who argued that abolition had been a failure due to the laziness and savagery of the slaves now claim that the Christian vision of a civilizing empire was also doomed.
You might say that the moral momentum ran out of the abolitionist movement. People found that other races were not becoming civilized. There was something difficult. They fought back. they didn't seem to learn as fast as we would appreciate to make them more pliable for us. Christian optimism about the spread of civilization and the Christianization of people of color around the world began to drain away.
If the non-white races seemed to reject the message of the missionaries, some in Britain began to ask if they could be civilized at all. One of those who thought not was the eminent writer and historian Thomas Carlyle. In 1849, Carlyle published an essay entitled Occasional Discourse on the Negro Question, in which he appealed for a return to some form of slavery. It was printed and reprinted in magazines across the world and helped transform the 19th century debate about race.
Carlyle's voice is a kind of prophetic voice, you know, which booms out from his study in Cheyne Walk in Chelsea, and he writes these, you know, extraordinarily powerful prophetic pieces which were read, you know, with gusto by Victorians, and one can imagine them all sitting around their fires reading the latest periodical that's come out with this flow of rhetoric. In this case, in the Occasional Discourse on the Negro Question, the flow of rhetoric is about the necessity for inequality. Inequality is the proper way to run a society. Those who know should rule those who don't know. Men should rule women. White people should rule black. Educated people should rule the masses.
The depth to which these ideas became embedded within mid-Victorian society was revealed by one of the most controversial events of the whole 19th century. In 1865, the people of Morant Bay, a tiny settlement in East Jamaica, attacked a courthouse during a minor demonstration.
In return, the Governor General imposed martial law and ordered his soldiers to go on a killing spree. It was a killing time. Nearly 500 people were just executed. 600 people just flogged, some of them to the point of death. And 1,000 homes torched. Enormous disparity in terms of the retaliation against these people. And you know, when all this was being done, the so-called rebels didn't put up a fight. You know, when their houses were being burned, they weren't terrorists, they weren't murderers, you know. All they wanted was for the judiciary to treat them with a sense of justice.
The man who ordered the killing was Governor Edward Eyre. And when news of what he had done reached Britain, the liberal establishment was shocked.
And the cause is taken up by the old abolitionists who've kept going and kept going and kept going, and the old anti-slavery societies kind of wrench themselves back into action and mobilize themselves again, and all the ladies who've been doing it for decades when the men have gone off and done more interesting things. You know, there they are with the machinery still in place that can be mobilized when you need to.
Their tactic was to put Governor Eyre on trial for mass murder. But in court, he was acquitted, due in part to a huge wave of popular support.
He had the whole of the House of Lords, parliamentarians, bishops, priests, the establishment, the aristocracy backing him, saying that he was justified in imposing severe order on these people, because that's the only language they could understand, because their black people were brutes.
Eyre's defense was orchestrated by the high priest of the new racism, Thomas Carlyle. But behind him stood many members of the British literary elite, all of whom made known their support for Governor Eyre and his actions at Morant Bay. The art critic and writer John Ruskin, the author of Vanity Fair, William Makepeace Thackeray, the Reverend Charles Kingsley, writer of the children's classic The Water Babies, and Charles Dickens, the most celebrated author of the century.
The notion of treating other people with some degree of justice and rule of law finally went out of the window and was demolished in the 1860s over Morant Bay. You know, from then on, we knew that the empire was about ruling people with the maximum degree of coercion.
Some of the new ideas about race in the High Victorian Age drew their evidence from the world of the dead. Based on the study of corpses and skeletons, the burgeoning science of anatomy laid the foundations for a new scientific racism. In Britain, the most important race scientist was a now-forgotten Edinburgh surgeon. Ruined by a body-snatching scandal in the 1820s, he had fled Britain in disgrace. But in the 1840s, Dr. Robert Knox resurfaced with the publication of a new book.
Race is everything. Literature, science, art, in a word, civilization depends on it.
For Robert Knox in that book, race is everything. It determined your character, it determined your position in civilization, it determined your destiny.
Can the black races become civilized? I should say not.
He saw racial conflict and extermination happening all around the world. It was natural for him to believe that racial types were bound to struggle and that the superior races would dominate the naturally inferior ones.
The Saxon race will never tolerate them, never amalgamate, never be at peace. It is a war of extermination. One or other must fall.
Robert Knox was not a lone voice. In America, a group led by the renowned craniologist Samuel George Morton had begun to collect the skulls of different races and compare them.
Skulls were chosen to be measured because it was reckoned that the skull was the container of the most important part of the human body, the brain. The bigger the skull, the bigger the brain. The shape of the skull, the shape of the brain.
The American School of Race Scientists concluded that the races, as measured through their skulls, were so different as to be separate species. Tasmanians, Africans, American Indians were not the lower races of men. They were perhaps not fully human at all. One writer compared the extermination of these races by white settlers as being like the melting of snow before the advancing rays of the sun. But the theory that was to have the most powerful impact upon race came not from the anatomists or the skull measurers, but from the work of one of the 19th century's greatest minds.
The Origin of Species really threw a bombshell, first of all, into science. It really invented the science of biology, and then into religion and into society. And what Darwin did in some ways was to give an alibi for being a judge. If evolution had changed the races and the species of the world, why hadn't it done the same to humans?
Many believed that Darwin's laws had done just that. Natural selection, they claimed, neatly explained and justified the global expansion of the great British race.
Life favors a hierarchy of specialists. And you find that throughout the plant and the animal world. There are bugs on top of bugs on top of bugs, each one surviving at another's expense, each one filling a niche that another can't occupy. People, Darwin said, are the same way. They are expansive organisms. In other words, English are just like other organisms. They are successful because they are good at expanding.
Those who understood colonialism and human competition in terms of Darwin's theories became known as the social Darwinists. Men like the radical biologist Thomas Henry Huxley and the famous economist Herbert Spencer. And social Darwinism foresaw very different fates for the various races of mankind.
Evolution was in operation. It was advancing the most recently evolved, the most successfully evolved, that is, the Northern Europeans, the British. But evolution also suggested that there had to be losers in this great cosmic process. And the losers were those peoples who could not compete. And once put into competition with superior races, were doomed to disappear. And this was likely to happen to all the native peoples in North America, in the Pacific, and in Africa.
Across the world, the crimes of imperialism now came to be taken as proof that the social Darwinists were right. In North America, centuries of disease and war had devastated the Native Americans. Whole nations had been all but annihilated. In parts of the Australian mainland, the peoples of the outback were, it seemed, going the same way as their cousins in Tasmania. And across Africa, the scramble for empire had brought the might of Europe to bear against innumerable peoples, killing literally millions. The social Darwinists predicted a future in which these races, like many animal species, would only be remembered as curios, stuffed exhibits in anthropological museums. The white man's burden and the Christian dream of benign imperialism were rendered obsolete.
Old missionaries who still talked about the equality of humanity and talked about everyone descended from Adam and Eve and talked about that the truth, the only truth came from the Bible, were seen as being extraordinarily old-fashioned, who simply had failed to come to terms with the great scientific thinking of the age.
And these racial theories were not only applied in new colonies, but also in the oldest parts of the empire. In the traditional story of imperialism, British India has usually been represented as an example of benign imperial rule. The British Raj, we are told, was run by men who were competent, professional, and wise. Men who brought order and prosperity to a chaotic land. But there is an aspect of Indian history that has been written out of this account of the imperial past. In the mid-1870s, the Great Deccan Plain of India was affected by the climatic phenomenon we now know as El Niño, and within months, millions of peasants had begun to starve.
The monsoons had failed. People had eaten their food reserves. India stood on the precipice of a great human tragedy. At this point, the Viceroy of India, Lord Lytton, was totally absorbed in what was probably the largest party in world history, celebrating the coronation of Queen Victoria as Empress of India. This is one of the great catering feats in history, since it meant wining and dining more than 60,000 satraps and princes and retainers and friends of the British Empire in India over the course of a long week.
As Lord Lytton and the ruling elite of the Raj feasted at banquets and posed for official photographs, millions were slowly dying in the countryside, and the Viceroy justified his inaction with arguments gleaned from the social Darwinists.
This was a very, very crass use of a Darwinian evolutionary notion of survival of the fittest, whereby a famine could be actually seen as an instrument of Darwinian winnowing, yes, that people who were unfit would effectively perish as a result of this. And to intervene to stop them perishing was really to interfere with almost a rule of nature.
What made the famines especially deadly was that the British had dismantled ancient systems that had for centuries prevented food shortages from turning into famines.
if you'd had a poor monsoon and there was a food shortage. Many people still had enough. They may have had less, but they would have had enough because they grew their own food, or they would have had access to it from other groups in the community who would share it with them during a time of crisis.
All this had been wiped away when the British forced the poorest peasants to grow cash crops like wheat and rice for export, thereby ushering them into a global market. And in the 1870s, that market condemned them to death. By 1877, millions in southern and central India were starving. In desperation, parents sold their children for scraps of food. Many thousands committed suicide. And in some places, the people were forced into cannibalism. And all the while, the food that could have saved them was piled up on the docks of Madras, ready to be shipped to Britain and America. But to Lord Lytton, it was no more than an unfortunate byproduct of the iron laws of social Darwinism.
If you read the letters of Lord Lytton, what is so striking about them is not simply their fanatical devotion to the market and the market forces. It's not simply their, you know, parsimony and desire to spend as little as possible, but the enormous calm with which they accept the fact that millions of Indians would die, because these are Indians they believe are the useless part of the population, the poorest of the poor, people condemned to death by nature.
When finally Lytton was pressured into action, his solution proved just as deadly as the famine itself.
Lord Lytton sets up a system of outdoor relief that looks more like Nazi concentration camps than anything representing decent human charity. First of all, there's the obligatory test. You can't be relieved, that is, given a job or food within 10 miles of your residence. You must walk, and you must walk sometimes distances of hundreds of kilometers, and tens of thousands of people die in the course of that. Then you're put to work doing heavy labor, very heavy labor, breaking stone, working on the railroads, and you're confined then to squalid camps where your daily diet is in caloric terms less than that provided to inmates of Buchenwald and other Nazi concentration camps. They become literally and simply death camps. And perhaps worst of all, children were now too weak and small to do the necessary work. Children became the main victims of Lytton's cool-hearted policy.
Million Indians died in the famines of the 1870s, but they were not the only famines of the British Raj, and they were not the last. Famines returned in the 1880s and the 1890s, and in all, almost 30 million Indians starved to death under British rule, a story airbrushed out of the glorious accounts of the Raj and the men who ruled over it. Social Darwinism had justified genocidal policies in the colonies, and in the same years it also fueled new fears amongst the British elite, fears of other dangerous races living in their midst, the working classes of their own city.
Race and class are actually very close to each other. If you look at books about race around Darwin's time, they often talk about the Cockney race, the English country race, the Scottish race. There were drawings of the head of a typical member of the Cockney race, and the word was used quite seriously. There were maps made of where the criminal races lived. These were the rookeries. This was the East End, the melting pot of all the horrors that were going to go out and infect the rest of the population.
Race scientists and social reformers visited prisons to study the criminal races at first hand, and among them was Charles Darwin's cousin, Francis Galton. Galton was terrified by the fact that the underclass
were reproducing faster than the middle classes. Darwinian law had, it seemed, been turned on its head. The least fit were surviving. Reversing this situation became his mission.
Darwin had looked backwards. Where had we come from? Galton turned the telescope round and looked forward. Where were we going? And he devoted much of the rest of his life to the idea of understanding Homo sapiens, us, as a species, and trying to direct where Homo sapiens was going to go in order to become more sapient, more wise in the future, more of a genius, and less of what he saw, more stupid, more ignorant, and more decayed.
Galton designed a new science of human selective breeding. He dreamed of encouraging the middle classes to have more children and inhibiting breeding amongst the lower and criminal classes. And he named his new science eugenics. In the last decades of the 19th century, it became widely respected, attracting an array of high-profile supporters.
They included many of the great figures of the late 19th, early 20th century, people like George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, Winston Churchill, all of them absolutely convinced eugenicists.
In the first years of the 20th century, all the racial theories developed in the Victorian age, eugenics, social Darwinism, and scientific racism, came together in a forgotten outpost of colonialism. This is Namibia. But at the dawn of the 20th century, it was a German colony of Southwest Africa and home to an ancient people called the Herero. In 1904, they rebelled against the brutality of German rule. What followed was to prefigure the worst crimes of the 20th century. The Germans committed innumerable massacres and atrocities, but they were unable to hunt down and destroy all the Herero people across such a vast landscape. And when the Nama, another of the Namibian peoples, rose up, the Germans turned instead to a recent invention, the concentration camp. In these camps, the Herero and Nama were imprisoned and enslaved. Thousands were worked to death, others raped, beaten, or simply murdered by the guards. The most infamous and deadly of the camps was at a place called Shark Island.
Shark Island was established for the express purpose of killing people. Anybody placed on that island, everybody knew they were going to die. People knew that, the German officers knew that. If I were to have to use the language of the Nazi period, then I would certainly see Shark Island as a death camp.
The people were together in Shark Island from all over Namibia. Hereros, Tamaras, Bushman, Nama. And they had good-blooded mother there. My own family, my ancestors. They were also killed there.
In this desolate place, on the southern edge of Africa, 3,500 people were exterminated with the speed and efficiency that was to become the hallmark of 20th century slaughter.
The genocides which took place in Namibia in 1904 to 1909, they are the precursor to what happens in the Nazi period. They are the precursor. They have the same symptoms in the sense that you can see the bureaucratization of mass killing. And this, for me, is the central thing. It's not just killing for killing. No. It's a combination between killing and bureaucracy.
Today, Shark Island is a campsite for tourists. The Africans who were frozen and starved to death here have been almost erased from memory. But a century after the Namibian genocide,
the true horror of what happened on Shark Island is beginning to reemerge. In a recently discovered mass grave, just a few kilometers from the site of Shark Island, lie some of the victims of the 20th century's first genocide. Other victims were denied even the meager dignity of a mass grave. They became the raw material of racial science. Their skulls, and even severed heads, were sold to museums in Europe and used to prove the inferiority of Africans. The trade in skulls was so accepted that it was even depicted on a postcard. In the aftermath of the genocide, German racial scientists continued to use Namibia as a field laboratory and the African peoples who had survived as their subjects. In 1908, a eugenicist called Eugen Fischer traveled to the small town of Rehoboth, home to a people of mixed Boer and African heritage who called themselves the Rehoboth Bastards. Fischer and his assistants spent months photographing, measuring, and examining the inhabitants of this town, people whose descendants still live here.
The person at the bottom there is my grandfather, Malcolm McNabb, and above him is his brother, Charles McNabb. My grandfather used to talk a lot about what they did, measurements, the eyes, the nose, the lips, the ears, hair, etc. They was not aware of the nature of the experiment.
Lying in the vaults of an archive in modern-day Namibia, Eugen Fischer's original files and photographs remain as he left them a century ago. They reveal his methods and also his aims.
Here, Eugen Fischer has lined the different pictures up next to each other to try to trace very specific facial features like the eyes or the noses. And the reason he's done this is to try to show how very specific African facial features like high cheekbones and the drawn-out eyes that represent the African genes are very prominent and become more prominent through the degenerations. Eugen Fischer came to Namibia to prove one basic point, and that was that racial mixing was always bad, and that the African gene is dominant over the white gene.
Fischer's work in Rehoboth sealed his reputation as one of Germany's leading racial scientists. It also brought him recognition from a nation that was then experiencing the greatest influx of immigration the world had ever seen. In the first years of the 20th century, the ethnic makeup of America was being transformed as millions of immigrants poured into her great cities. Many of those who feared that mass immigration would lead to widespread racial mixing looked to the ideas of eugenics, an increasingly powerful science.
Eugenics flourished, mutated, and went out of control when it got to the United States. And the irony is that the eugenics movement in the United States, which certainly descended directly from Galton, had the great advantage of having a lot of money, huge amounts of money.
Some of that money was used to establish the Eugenics Records Office, ran by the infamous Charles Davenport. In order to defend the health and purity of the white race, Davenport and his followers sought to identify those classes and those races in America whom they considered genetically unfit.
identified and monitored, the scientists would then take control of their lives and their fertility.
Once you were identified as a certain class, it meant what school you could go to, what cemetery you could be buried in, where you could live. It was a matter of life and death. Marriage laws were established in dozens of states around the United States, saying that people could not marry outside of their group. Blacks could not marry whites. Indians could not marry blacks. In Virginia, if you married the wrong person, meaning interracial marriage, they would unmarry you. They would invalidate your marriage.
27 states passed eugenics marriage laws, and eugenicists spread their message using the new medium of cinema. The propaganda was intended to protect the genetic health of the white race. This would be achieved by eradicating those deemed unworthy through forced mass sterilization.
They went about methodically tracking ancestry and targeting bloodlines for extinction. That's eugenics, the effort to create a white master, blonde, blue-eyed master race by wiping out other bloodline until they were left only with themselves and people who resembled themselves. And what's important here is that these people thought they were saving humanity. These people thought they were liberals. They were reformers.
Eugenics was a worldwide movement. In Sweden, an official program forcibly sterilized 60,000 people, mental patients, and members of the ethnic minorities. In Britain, the Eugenics Society received widespread support from across the political spectrum. But it was in Germany that the radical ideas of the American eugenics movement found its most receptive audience.
Anything connected to America would seem to be modern, progressive, scientific, democratic, reasonable, so it must be good. America was the future, the force of the future. Secondly, I think that many European eugenicists, including the Germans, liked the tone adopted by American eugenicists, which was very radical and sort of no nonsense, and they didn't use euphemisms. They said exactly what they meant.
The Americans provided more than just inspiration. American foundations also bankrolled the development of German eugenics. This was the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute of Anthropology and Human Heredity. In the 1930s, the men and women who worked here received grants from the American Rockefeller Foundation. And the leading scientist here was the man who made his name in Namibia, Eugen Fischer. Under the Nazis, Fischer was empowered to sterilize the racially mixed people of Germany's Rhineland, 400 of them, all children. The majority of those sterilized by the Nazis before 1939, however, were the mentally ill. But when the Nazis began their war, they abandoned sterilization in favor of adult euthanasia, the Nazi euphemism for murder. The victims of this program were amongst the first people gassed by the Nazis, but the program wasn't restricted to the mentally ill.
When they have killed the target figure of mental patients they want to kill, which is roughly 70,000 people, they slightly exceed that. So the first thing they do then is to contact the SS, who have large numbers of what they deem to be sick concentration camp prisoners. In other words, people who might have got wear glasses or, you know, be myopic or have a wooden leg or something. So they want them out of the way. So these people oblige, and they take 15 or 20,000 people from the concentration camps and kill them on behalf of the SS. It's a bit like sort of contract work. And then when the SS and other people have decided they're going to go for the big project, which is to kill the Jewish population of Europe, and in particular that of Poland, which is the biggest population they're concerned with, then those people push themselves forward and say, well, hey, we can do this. We've done it. We have a record of doing this. We've murdered people. And they become the core personnel in all the big extermination camps.
These killing centres were the second network of concentration camps and death camps in German history. And the experts in eugenics, or race hygiene as the Germans called it, were involved not just in their day-to-day running, but also in the highest levels of planning.
It's worth reminding ourselves that the Wannsee Conference, which was the one that set up the plan for the final solution, almost half the people around that table had doctorates, PhDs, in race hygiene, or genetics, as we'd say today. So there really is a genuine link between the Galtonian agenda and the horrors which happened in Germany.
The German experts in race hygiene who assembled here at the Wannsee Villa outside Berlin dreamed of racial genocide, just like their spiritual predecessors, the race scientists and the social Darwinists of the Age of Empire. But the colonial genocides, inspired and justified by the 19th century theorists, have been written out of Europe's history. The horrors of the Shark Island death camp, the destruction of the Tasmanian Aboriginals, the 30 million victims of the Indian famine, all have been forgotten. The erasure of this.
All right, everyone, we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. I hope you learned something there, and it is telling. See, this is why history is so important. This is why I've always loved history and studied history, because there's a repeating of it at all times. Only for those that do not know, nor have, are those that have an ennui or a disregard for it. And more importantly, blind faith always is the first step to genocide. That's why we always say that. Here we go to a commercial break. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032#. Let's put this together. Very, very important. So we'd love to hear from you. We're going to a commercial break, and we'll be right back after these quick commercial breaks.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
David, are you there?
Yes, Scotty. Sorry about that, man. I was on mute. Sorry about that, everyone. I'm talking on mute. My mistake. Hey, I just want to say, hey, give us a call, 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032#. I was talking on mute. Sorry about that. Tell us what you heard. What did you think of what you heard today, and why it was so important? And we're definitely in the last 15 minutes of the show. We'd love to hear from you. So jump on right away because it's so important, because what you think and what you heard is actually going to be edifying to everyone else. So the lines are open. Definitely want to hear from you. Now, the reason why I played this is because of this. What you're seeing here and what happened here is what is actually happening and being put into place right now. One of the reasons that the Tasmanians were totally annihilated is because they gave into blind faith. They thought that they could, partake in the overall procedures and the policies of righteous government with those people that had been already colonizing, murdering, and all of the evidence was there, and nothing has changed. But what they did was that they took an asymmetrical warfare approach to the Tasmanians and gave them what? They allowed their morality to be their hindrance. And what do I mean by that? They told them that they cared about them and that they wanted justice. And the Tasmanians had blind faith, and it cost them everything. This is what has happened to us in so many ways. And how do they indoctrinate that? They indoctrinate that by science and religion. That's what they did then, and that's what they do now. And if you look at what was happening with that whole thing and at that time, if you picked up what they were saying, when Britain started to go through some economic hard times and they so-called wanted to give civil rights has been much further than 1964, sisters and brothers. It's been a doctrine of bondage for centuries. And so what they wanted to do was give them a form of civil rights to make them civilized. This is why they gave them civil rights, because then you will walk away from your absolute and primary rights. You've heard us talk about that before. And then what did they do? Once they gave them that, the economic collapse happened, and they said that, see what happens? We gave them freedom, and the lazy blacks did nothing, and now they're the cause for the economic collapse. When their order was rule at all times. The order has always been to rule and has never been to be in collective prudence. This is where we always fall for the okie doke, because we don't study history and we allow their science to wage against us and to change our minds and to bring about different forms of mental illness, physical illness, And to spoil our souls so that our hearts become hardened and our overall frequency becomes deadened. And all we want to do is catch the next hit from Master. And it's not anyone else's fault. We always want to say, why don't they? Why don't, instead of, we don't take the responsibility of say, why don't I? If you notice with all of these cultures, those individuals that were able to even fight off and actually have a form of staying away from them, they did much better. But once they gave in, that was it. And that is always going to be the case. And one of the things that those that were caught in this whole thing, they were never prepared. They were always dependent. And I would ask you, are you prepared or depending? And in the overall eugenics plan of science, religion, in the direction that it has taken, it will always take you to a death camp at the appropriate time once the economic collapses start to happen. I played this so that you can see what happened in history. The famine of 1870 is what is happening right now. They engineered that in India to enslave those people even more. How did they engineer that exact same thing here right now, but you don't see it because we've been blindly following the school of obedience and doing what they tell us to do. and causing us never to be able to produce anything. Let me tell you how they've done that. They collapsed, engineered India's economy so that the famine of 1870 can happen, but the greatest famine is coming right now, and it's going to be the famine of 2017, 2016, and you're going to be the target. Why? Because they changed the overall logistics of how food gets to you by something called, are you ready? Just-in-time delivery. And they took away all of the former ways of bringing food or bringing assets and resources to the people away. We no longer know the intrinsic power of our former, of our ancestors that would be able to garnish food for us and to have the essential staple assets for all of us to resources and assets to sustain our lives. So now we've gone to their system, and their system is purposely designed at the appropriate time to take away your ability to take care of yourself. And right now we are working on just-in-time delivery, and they're going to turn the lights off on it, and you're going to have the famine of 2016-2017, where people will be selling their children for food, where people will be practicing cannibalism, where people will be starving, where people will be without. This is history, but see, most of us say, oh, nah, that won't happen. Again, they can't do that. Because you know nothing about history. And you know nothing about their direction of today. And this is where we are. The zoning for murder, the zoning for killing. And they, if you look at it, it's always in the roots of the government. And if you see it, it's always funded by wealthy, the wealthiest individuals of that time. And I ask you something right now. Who's funding the eugenics program right now? Oh, Ted Turner, Bill Gates, all of the, some of the people that some black folks will take a check from because they gave you a computer. And think that, oh, Bill and Melinda's great people. You're being set up. And they pass laws. They promote movies. And then they bring you vaccinations. And then they have the DNA selecting. They want to have DNA selecting of who they need to target. This is why you're seeing the DNA targeting happening as we speak. You want to know where one of them is? It's so-called Ancestry.com, where you give in your DNA, send it to them, and you don't even realize that you've been targeted and been used. See, they've been at this practice for a while. We haven't been at this because we foolishly have been having blind faith in the system. Their system works against us because we have never devised or developed one that protects us. Got a caller in queue. Let's go to this caller. Welcome, caller, to Tando Radio Show. What is your name, where you're calling from, and what is your question or comment?
Greetings to you, Brother Dave. This is Rod. So I just wanted to chime in and just say this was a great piece you played. I didn't come in until maybe like an hour into the program, but I'm very familiar with the story of Chuganini. Dr. Anosu Rashidi actually wrote a great piece about her, and he talked about her when I traveled with him to Egypt in 2007. So I just believe what you played really shows the capability of white people to thoroughly destroy non-white people if they set their minds to it. I think it's the greatest example of what they're capable of, and I agree with you 100% that we as people do not study history. And if we study history, we would know that the same people, the same exact people who did what they did to the Tasmanians are doing what they're doing to us right now, and white, almost totally wiped out the Native Americans, are the same people that we work with, the same people we go to when we have when we're sick and we go to the doctor, same people that drive our buses, and for some of us, our neighbors. These are the same people, they just wear better clothes. they have the same mentality, and they're under the same system of white supremacy that their ancestors were under. And I just think that this is a great piece to really bring home the understanding that the savagery that they were perpetrating then is happening as we speak right now. It has never stopped. They've just gotten better at hiding what they're doing to us. And I just wanted to say thank you just for bringing this information out, because I don't know how many American Africans really know about the story of the Tasmanians, because it's literally the most thorough genocide in human history. There was no one left when they were done with them, literally down to the last person. And it just shows the savagery that they're capable of, and the fact that nothing has really changed. They have just gotten better at hiding their iniquity and also putting it in plain sight and having us anesthetized to the point that, like you said, we're so busy looking to them for everything, which is what they've done. They've transformed themselves into the deity. I mean, they control all right. 10 areas of people activity. Exactly. They control economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, war, and they control healthcare. There is no aspect of our lives that they don't control, just like they did our ancestors from 500 years ago on up to right now. So we're in the same predicament, minus the shackles. The shackles are all mental, and they have us viewing them as the benevolent master, when in reality they are terrorists. They are the world's first original terrorists and the best at terrorism. Every other aspect of terrorism you see, I don't care if it's in the Middle East or wherever else they're doing it, is literally a cheap rendition of what white people have been doing and are capable of. And all the terrorism that you're seeing from non-white people is what they learned from white people. And if we keep this in mind and understand that this is the system that they put forward to keep us in a state of literally, we're unable to recognize wolves in sheep's clothing. This, what you played tonight reminded me of Reverend Pinckney and the massacre in South Carolina. If we just knew our history and just remembered the four little girls, the fact that the church is not a sacred place, they will kill us in church, just like they did with Reverend Pinckney and the other eight people that were killed, just like they did with our ancestors with the bombing and the four little girls. There's nothing that they don't do that doesn't have a history.
You know what? And I didn't want to interrupt, but you said something. They will kill us in church. Well, see, the church is killing us.
Absolutely.
And that is it's not the structure, but it's actually the institution. That is, it's the institution that are following the demonic rituals of this practice of human sacrifice and human enslavement. Like you said, the mental bonds are so great. You know what, brother? Hold on. We got one other caller. That's
sure.
In queue. Love. One sec. Welcome, caller, to Tando Radio Show. What is your name? Where are you calling from? We got 1 minute, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to share what you wanted to say.
This is Brother Davis, man. I'm calling from up here in South Minnesota. But I also wanted to comment in reference to the mentality of the oppressor. We have to understand we are not them. So we cannot live under the fortitude of a weapon. We have to live in accordance to our individualism, meaning our humanity. That's why the Ma'at was established as the first civilized understanding amongst humanism. But I just wanted a great show, Dave, and keep what you're doing, brother.
For sure. Brothers, thank you so much. Listen, we're going to pick up some of this tomorrow, and then we'll also do the 96-hour margin call. But I wanted to bring this in. History is so important, because you know why it's important? Because they are not creative enough not to follow it, because they realize that all they have to do is to ensure that it's spread out over time, because if they use the science against people, people won't know, nor will they care to know. It's so important to know. Much love. Thank you, Brother Roz. Brother Davis, look forward to tomorrow. Tune in again. Would love to hear from you all. And if you didn't get to call in today, this is was really important, because this is where we are right now. This is what you call FEMA regions programming, and this is what you call executive orders that actually are waged in your overall enslavement. And this is what you are going to see in martial law. Are you prepared? You're listening to Tando Radio Show. Just want to thank you. Much love, much respect. God willing, before we get out of here, before you ask for a fortune, to make sure you give good fortune to people. And it's never goodbye. It's always I'll see you later. Much love, much respect. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world.